for the glory of old state, for her founder strong and great, for the future that we wait. Praise the song, praise the song.
Sing our love and loyalty,
sing our hopes that bright and free.
Rest, O Mother dear, with thee, all with thee, all with thee.
Where else would you rather be? I'm Paul Clifford, CEO of the Penn State Alumni Association. Welcome to the Alumni Association's People of Penn State podcast. Each week on the podcast, you can expect to hear the voices of Penn Staters talking about what they're passionate about. You can expect to feel the pride and the power of the Penn State network. You can find the People of Penn State podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Subscribe and give us a rating. Ratings and reviews help others find these great stories, and it's the best way to connect Penn Staters to the great stories that we're sharing here on the People of Penn State podcast. We have another great story lined up for you on today's show. Today, I'm joined by Ryan Brown. He's a former student leader, retired Navy lieutenant, currently working in Johnson & Johnson's Military Veteran Leadership Development Program. He's a current MBA student in the Smale College of Business. He's an alumni council member. He's an entrepreneur. We're going to get to all of that coming up here in just a minute. But let's welcome Ryan into the People of Penn State podcast. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
Good. If we could have a subtitle for this podcast, it would be Staying Busy. Because I think that we're going to start to see that trend here in just a couple minutes. But before we get into all of that, share a little bit about your journey to Penn State. How did you become a Nittany Lion?
So that all started with an individual by the name of Kurt Marshall. So Kurt Marshall invited me up to Penn State for the Spend a Fall Day event as I was pursuing a degree in architecture at the time. And once I came up to Penn State, it was just kind of history, just seeing Penn State in the fall, being able to sort of experience that football atmosphere. It was absolutely incredible. And I was like, you know what, this is definitely the place for me. It has the program that I want. And the people here actually, you know, care about me as a person. So that sort of lent myself to me, you know, putting my all into getting into Penn State.
You're not the first person that I've heard that Kurt Marshall was the guy who opened the door to Penn State. He's done that for so many. You mentioned an interest in architecture. Where did that grow from?
I started in high school, right? I attended a small high school in the city of Philadelphia by the name of the Charter High School for Architecture and Design. And basically they were just exposing, you know, inner city youth to more of the arts and design, community. And, you know, I got to spend a lot of time working with architects, in my early years. So around like, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, I actually was an intern at a, local architecture firm, out in Philadelphia, Ewing Cole, where I was able to work with the team on a number of projects throughout my time, to include the MetLife Stadium that the Giants and Jets play in. And that sort of helped, you know, stoke the fire that was, you know, my desire to become an architect. That's since changed, though.
That's amazing. That's a great project to be a part of. We were just talking about that the other day. Like, how insulting is it that the Jets have to play in Giant Stadium? Like, they don't even have their own. They don't even have their own stadium as a pro franchise. I think that changed with the new stadium, but maybe that's part of the curse of the New York Jets.
Probably so.
Yeah. So I alluded to this earlier, but you were while at Penn State, you were involved in Black Caucus. You were in UPUA. You were a leader with the National Panhellenic Council, a member of Alpha Phi Alpha. Talk a little bit about these student experiences, and how did you manage to pack all of those into your time here at Penn State?
So I got involved really, really quickly at Penn State. Actually, during my first semester at Penn State, I joined Black Caucus. And I joined Black Caucus because I was looking for a way to be able to build community at Penn State, and Black Caucus offered me that opportunity. Shortly after that, I joined my fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha, and, you know, the everything else just sort of followed and just built upon the experiences I had along my journey throughout Penn State. You know, you mentioned a few things that I was a part of, but, you know, I found myself, you know, becoming more and more of a voice for the people of color at Penn State, you know, specifically the students of color, to sort of help elevate their voices to the highest levels possible during my time at Penn State, to sort of help combat different things that they experience along their journey. And that the catalyst for that was really my own personal experience at Penn State. I dealt with some racism and some sort of discriminatory acts in my early years at Penn State. And it sort of helped being a part of Black Caucus sort of helped me be able to sort of channel that negative experience into something positive, to be able to ensure that future students don't have to deal with some of the hardships that I dealt with along my journey. Everything just sort of built on top of each other. I went from just being a general member of Black Caucus to being on the executive board and staying on the executive board until I graduated, served, you know, in a number of capacities within my fraternity, and while an undergraduate, as well as, you know, in my alumni status, was a member of UPUA strictly out of ensuring that there was a voice for the students of color at Penn State, because I found that UPUA often overlooked the needs of Black and Brown students at Penn State. You know, I served on the MLK committee. I was on MPHC. I did a number of things to include, you know, different societies and stuff like that while at Penn State. And, you know, it was really rewarding to be able to sort of help elevate the voices of the students. You know, I had pretty much a direct line to the university president at the time, Rodney Erickson, to sort of help elevate any issues and really bring to light, you know, the experience of the students of color at Penn State, and just facilitating anything that needed to be done along their journey.
You know, we have featured Fatima Odebesi on this program, on a previous version of this program when it was called Coffee Hour. And she talked about her work as Black Caucus president and ensuring that the communities of color were represented on UPUA. But you actually were a predecessor to that effort in ensuring that Black Caucus actually had a seat on UPUA. Talk a little bit about that journey and how you've now seen that evolve.
Absolutely. To provide a little background on that, Black Caucus is the umbrella organization for the multicultural student organizations at Penn State University, specifically main campus or University Park. And so we have a contingency of students that come to us and voice their concerns. So essentially, you know, for lack of better words, Black Caucus is like the student government for multicultural organizations at Penn State. You know, we help elevate their voice. We help encourage their programming. We help do a number of things to sort of bring light to all the different things that they have going on. But we're also the force that fights for whatever they need. And so during my time, instead of just going to UPUA and being like, hey, Black Caucus specifically needs a seat, I decided to run. And so while serving as president of Black Caucus, I ran for UPUA and won an at-large seat, and was able to serve as a representative to sort of help elevate the voice of the students of color. Because UPUA historically really only represented, you know, a non-person of color contingency at Penn State. Just based off of who was involved and the different leadership that they had at the time. And so after I ran and I stirred up a lot of trouble for UPUA, you know, staging walk-ins, staging sit-ins, bringing every student of color I could possibly think of to the meetings to help fill out the open forum so that they actually hear directly from the students the things that are bothering them, whether it was, you know, lack of funding opportunities, whether it was a lack of support from the university or you know, something more specific like some race related issue.
Sure.
I made sure that these students had the opportunity to be heard no matter what. And so I gave the community a direct line into UPUA essentially. And from there, you know, all of the students that sort of followed my time at Penn State built upon that by, instead of, you know, forcing someone to run for a UPUA seat every single year, they fought to have a seat actually delegated for the Black Caucus, right, organization, and have that Black and Brown voice be able to be highlighted without having to sort of fight for a seat the same way that IFC and Penn Hell have their seats on UPUA.
Right. Sounds like what John Lewis might call some good trouble that you were stirring up while you were here at Penn State.
Absolutely. They didn't see it that way at the time, but that's definitely what it was.
Debuted as the first official publication of the Penn State Alumni Association a mere 111 years ago, the Penn Stater magazine is an exclusive benefit for members of the Penn State Alumni Association. The magazine features captivating and informative stories of Penn State and Penn Staters and is delivered bimonthly to members. The Penn Stater is now also available online at pennstatermag.com. The site includes the contents of the print editions of the magazine, as well as bonus content, including extended Q&As, features that couldn't fit in the print version, and more. Alumni Association members can access the site by logging in with their email address and their Alumni Association ID number, which appears in the footer of emails they receive from the association. If you're not a member of the Alumni Association, we invite you to join us today to access the Penn Stater and our numerous other member benefits by visiting alumni.psu.edu/membership. Now let's get back to today's show.
This is the People of Penn State podcast. I'm Paul Clifford. I'm joined by Ryan Brown. Ryan is the CEO of We Are Wonderfully Made. We're going to talk a little bit about that.
COO.
The COO. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. Did I steal your wife's title?
You stole my wife's title.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Apologies. Hopefully I won't get in any trouble.
I'll take all the heat for that one.
COO of We Are Wonderfully Made. Ryan, before we get into talking about that, after Penn State, you went into service to our country through the United States Navy. Talk a little bit about that decision and when you knew military service was going to be something that you would pursue.
Absolutely. You know, this ties into sort of the earlier anecdote that I provided about, you know, my experiencing some racism and discrimination at Penn State. So we talked about a little bit of how I had desires to become an architect. Early in my Penn State career, that was sort of derailed by a professor and some of his actions that sort of led me to leave the architecture program. And from there, I was kind of displaced in terms of employment opportunities because of the degree that I went with. I went with strictly from a more strategic standpoint of being able to keep my credits that I had already accumulated through the architecture program and still be able to graduate within 4 years because that's when my scholarship was going to run up. And so I graduated in May of 2013 with a degree in integrative arts. And, you know, I still tried to pursue architecture, but because I didn't have a bachelor's of science in architecture or bachelor's of architecture, I really couldn't enter the architectural world. And so I was not really offered a job opportunity following college. I applied to a number of firms to be like a drafter or, you know, just kind of work my way up into the ranks. And it didn't yield anything for me. And so I received a couple of offers. It's like, hey, you can come and work with us, but it will be more in terms of like an internship opportunity. So you wouldn't be paid. And so with no opportunities to actually make money, I knew that, you know, I had told myself a very long time ago, if I had the opportunity to serve in the military, I would do so. I told myself that way back in high school when I was trying to figure out a way to make sure that I was able to exit the environment I grew up. And so it was either go to college or join the military. And I had the opportunity now to do both, go to college and join the military. And I walked into a recruiter office probably 3 or 4 months before my May graduation date and was like, look, I'm getting ready to graduate here. I'd like to join. And the rest has been history. You know, I was able to complete my time in both the submarine community as well as the surface warfare community. And I had a very successful career.
Throughout your military experience, you had a variety. Throughout your military career, you had a variety of experiences. How did these shape where you wanted to take your career following your service?
The military taught me that I had value, regardless of what my degree said and what fields I wasn't able to enter out of undergrad. The military taught me some valuable lessons that made sure that I was marketable in any sort of job market, just based off of my military experience and being a people leader throughout my time in the military. You know, it taught me a lot about perseverance and sort of overcoming and just sort of being able to make the best out of whatever situation you're placed in. You become a MacGyver type, you know, coming out of the military. And so you're able to, you know, I guess adapt to any environment that you're placed in. And so that led me to where I am today.
So I mentioned in the introduction that you are part of Johnson & Johnson's Military Veteran Leadership Development Program. Share a little bit about that program, how you got involved in that, and what's entailed.
Absolutely. So I, upon knowing that I was going to be retired out of the military back in June of this year, probably around January, I started searching for job opportunities. And I was contacted by a headhunting company, recruiting company, basically in, you know, outlining what this program was. And so the Military Veterans Leadership Development Program here at Johnson & Johnson seeks to hire junior officers out of the military to sort of help cultivate sort of innovation and different way of thinking within the medtech and community. And so essentially this program offers you full-time employment with Johnson & Johnson, where you're able to sort of experience different aspects of the corporate world through three different rotations. Each rotation is 6 months. And so right now I'm in my first rotation where I'm working on developing a virtual reality strategy for Johnson & Johnson's Ethicon brand. which is focused around medical devices. And so this rotational period allows you to kind of sort of test the waters with different areas of corporate America that you find of interest or you think you'll be sort of valuable at. And you're able to sort of leverage your military experience while learning about sort of the company culture, the way corporate America works, and be able to translate your military skills into something that is going to be of value to the company in the future.
That's exciting. The Penn State Network, the power of the Penn State Network is really strong at J&J. I'm sure you're running into Penn Staters all the time. I know Wanda Hope is doing some great work over there for Johnson & Johnson. So yeah, you have to feel the power of the Penn State Network over
there. Absolutely.
So, all right. So you've just come out of the military.
Yes.
You're working at Johnson & Johnson. You're a current grad student at Penn State in as a world campus student. And you're an entrepreneur. And I'm sure I'm forgetting a bunch of other things like service to alumni council there. Let's dive into your entrepreneurial journey. How starting We Are Wonderfully Made came about. And let's let folks know a little bit about your company.
Absolutely. So We Are Wonderfully Made came about just through, you know, my wife's desire to own her own business.
Right.
And so for years, she's been trying different things and she just never really had a passion for it. And then one day her grandmother sat her down and taught her the family recipe for hot sauce. And so my wife, who is of Trinidadian descent, her Trinidadian grandmother taught her how to make Trinidadian pepper sauce. And, you know, my wife's father was basically like, hey, Iman, you should, you know, make this your company. You should bring this to market. And after some thinking, she was like, you know, I don't really like any other hot sauce. And this is really great. So I imagine people will enjoy it too. But also when looking at the hot sauce market, there's not really a representation for Trinidad and Tobago in the hot sauce market. When they think of Caribbean sauces, everyone automatically jumps to Jamaica.
Right.
But doing this allows Trinidad to sort of get its day in the spotlight. And so, you know, she had the family connection. She had the passion to keep this going. And she came to me one day. Well, she sent me an email because I was deployed when she initially started this idea. She emailed me while I'm in the Middle East and was like, hey, I want to start this company. You know, are you willing to help me? And my wife, knowing that I am, as she says, an extrovert and all I do is network and all this stuff. She was like, you know, I could really use a partner that's able to talk to people. I was like, sure, no problem. And she kind of gave me the rundown. I was like, yeah, you know, this is absolutely great. So fast forward a few months, I'm back home from deployment. We start making the sauce in our house. And start selling it, you know, while we were stationed in Virginia. And, you know, it's a big hit. And we're like, okay, you know, we have to continue this. And this was back in 2018. And, you know, we just continued on this journey, built out a website, you know, started manufacturing through a manufacturing facility. Working with different distributors and are in the process of just kind of continuing to grow the company as far and wide as we can, selling authentic Trinidadian pepper sauce. And so right now we have two flavors. We have our original Trini, which is grandma's tried and true recipe. And then we have the mango, which is one of our spins on the actual original recipe to really kind of bring out a little bit of sweetness, a little bit of additional flavor, and sort of highlight some other Caribbean or tropical flavors along the journey.
There you go. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can see some of the product that Ryan's talking about. Ryan, you know, what was the journey to kind of learn this new business like, right? I'm imagining that there are some like FDA regulations. I'm imagining that there's like, how do you source like bottling and kind of the marketing and brand things that you need to have in place to be competitive really in a crowded marketplace, right? You walk into any specialty store and go to the hot sauce section, right? And it's really crowded, right? So talk a little bit about kind of the learning process that you went through to bring this to market.
So we were very fortunate in that when entering into this sort of market, there's not really a lot of true barriers to entry. And so we focused initially on just being direct to consumer. That way we didn't have to worry about really any limitations that might be placed on us by these big companies requiring us to have a certain amount of inventory and requiring to sell through by a certain time frame. And we just started really grassroots. We spent a whole lot of time kind of dealing with the city and state's regulations along our journey. Like I mentioned, we started making it in our kitchen. And so there are certain cottage laws that you are required to follow. And it also limits how much money you can make. So once you make a certain amount, depending on the state you're in, you can't actually manufacture and sell any more of your products. So you're required to start, you know, sort of stepping up your manufacturing, which comes with additional regulations. And like you mentioned, there are some further FDA regulations that are required, especially when you start shipping products nationwide through various climates and environments. And so we were able to manage that by finding us a manufacturing facility that has all the FDA regulations and guidelines, and they're able to properly source all of our material get our bottles and you know, work with us to put our labels on them and all that stuff. So it was a lot of work, and actually my Penn State network is what helped us find the manufacturing company that is actually bottling our sauce for us. So you know, a huge thank you to the food science majors that I reached out to that were able to sort of help direct me on that journey to sort of be able to manufacture and distribute nationwide.
So if I am, if I'm going to have like a traditional Trinidadian meal, maybe some gear of pork and I need to get my sauce, where can I find and go out and buy your Trini sauce?
So you can go to our website, wearewonderfullymade.com. You can also go to amazon.com and search We Are Wonderfully Made, and our sauces will come up. You'll see our lovely clear label and our different varieties of sauces that are available there.
That's amazing. So if you are looking to try out a new hot sauce, go to their website, follow them on Instagram. Check them out on Facebook, WA Wonderfully Made, or wearewonderfullymade.com. You can go ahead and get yourself some of this great hot sauce from a fellow Penn Stater.
Yeah.
Ryan, I want to talk a little bit about your service to Penn State.
Absolutely.
Right. You were a student leader. You've went off and were in your military service. Even during your military service, you were active in the San Diego chapter when you were out there, and now you're a member of Alumni Council. I'd imagine your reason for getting with Alumni Council is similar to your reason for getting involved as a student with Black Caucus and UPUA. But talk a little bit about how you continue to advance the voice of people of color, of fellow Penn Staters of color.
Absolutely. I think there is a lot to sort of digest there when we're talking about all the reasons why, you know, I continue to be of service to Penn State. You know, I do it out of a love for the people that I've met who don't want to talk about what they experienced at Penn State. And being the person that I am, I think it's important for Penn State to be able to understand the narrative of all of its students, specifically the students of color, because, you know, more often than not, it's the students of color that graduate from Penn State and never come back, never reengage, because they had some negative experience while at Penn State, or just overall didn't have a good time. You know, when you see the droves of people coming back to Penn State, it's usually those in the majority population. And as far as they're concerned, Penn State was great, and there's nothing bad that can be said about it. But there's definitely an alternative narrative that goes on at Penn State that a lot of people don't get to see. And if through my service to the university and to its alumni population and student population, I can highlight the different narratives that go on at Penn State, I'll continue to do that. It's just one of those things where you want people to see the whole story, and it's not to diminish the legacy that is Penn State, because, you know, Penn State did help shape and mold me, good experiences, yeah, bad experiences. But it's to provide a full picture, to show that, you know, while Penn State is a great place, it can still be better. And it can be better by acknowledging the hardships that students of color face on a day-to-day basis. It's acknowledging the hardships that the alumni have faced throughout their time at Penn State, and help sort of mend those things so that people can come back to Penn State with an open heart and open mind to be able to impact the next generation of Penn Staters as we move forward.
Absolutely. It's those voices being represented, those voices being heard, things changing because those voices are at the table, mm-hmm, is what makes all of us stronger, right? It makes Penn State a better place because of that. We're not able to grow if we're ignoring populations, right? And so that's absolutely why we are particularly thrilled to have you on Alumni Council, as well as several of your fellow Penn State, I say several, 108 fellow members of Alumni Council, all representing a voice there, Penn Staters that they are there to represent.
Absolutely.
This is the People of Penn State podcast. I'm Paul Clifford. I'm joined by Ryan Brown. He's the COO of We Are Wonderfully Made. Ryan, we like to have a little bit of fun here on the podcast with some quick hitter questions here at the end. So I'm going to throw a couple of questions at you, and just let's see what's the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
What is your favorite hot sauce? Like your go-to?
The Trini sauce.
The Trini sauce. All right. Yes. How about your favorite class at Penn State?
My favorite class at Penn State was all of the African and African American studies courses I took. They were absolutely amazing.
If you could have dinner with anyone, who would it be and why? And I'm also going to add a little bit of a twist to this. Kind of, where would it be and what would you be eating?
I'd probably say I'd want to have dinner with John Lewis.
Okay.
He was an icon in the civil rights movement, and everyone always talks about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and all the the big name people, but there's something to be said about the people that work and sort of with limited recognition, and their contribution to the movement. And so without the work he did, through the number of organizations that he was a part of during his youth, you know, I wouldn't be able to be in the seats that I am in today. What would we eat? That is a tough question. I don't know if he'll like this, but I'd probably go with something from, you know, more traditional Southern cooking, or maybe something from one of the Caribbean islands, maybe some curry chicken or jerk chicken or something like that. Maybe some, maybe something along the lines of like Thanksgiving dinner, you know, that's always, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. John Lewis, definitely an icon, tried to influence the system from the outside during the civil rights movement, certainly influenced the system from the inside as a senator, through his political career. What is your most unusual We Are moment? You've had the opportunity to travel the world in service to our country. Where was that place where you heard We Are or said We Are that maybe you weren't expecting it?
Wow. I was actually on a Liberty port. And where was I? I was in New Amsterdam.
Okay.
Amsterdam. Sorry. And we were walking through the streets. We had just left like the Anne Frank house.
Okay.
And being the proud Penn Stater I am, I had on like a Penn State sweater, and across like there's like this canal that runs through like the little main area, and across the canal I hear this guy yelling "We Are," and I'm like looking around like, where are they? It's like I haven't heard that in a while. Where are they? And I just yell Penn State back, and you know, he does the whole thank you, you're welcome thing. It was great, and everyone from my ship is looking at me like, what is happening here? And I was like, oh, it's just a Penn State thing. Don't worry about it. It was absolutely amazing. It was like me with a crowd of like 10 naval officers, and everyone's like, what is he doing?
Right. Yeah. For people who don't know, it's hard to explain to them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your favorite Penn State sport?
Definitely football.
Definitely football. All right. And how about your favorite flavor of creamery ice cream?
Okay. So I have to admit that I am probably the most boring ice cream eater in the world. And so it's either going to be vanilla or like butter pecan.
Okay. Do you know vanilla is the most popular flavor of creamery ice cream? It's the most sold
really?
Flavor of creamery ice
cream. Nice. Nice. Yeah, so
you are not alone, Ryan.
I am not the adventurer.
Absolutely. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us on the People of Penn State podcast and allowing us to share your story with fellow Penn Staters.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We also want to thank our listeners. If you like this episode, I hope you will subscribe to the People of Penn State in your favorite podcast app of choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or drop us a review. Help us spread the word. You know, share the podcast with your friends and with fellow Penn Staters via your social media channels, and tag the Penn State Alumni Association with @PennStateAlums. If you're a member of the Alumni Association, thank you so much for your support. If you're not a member, what are you waiting for? Visit our website at alumni.psu.edu today, and you too can become a member of the world's largest alumni association. Thanks for listening, and thank you for all you do for the university, for the glory, and for the future. We are!
When we stood at childhood's gate, shapeless in the hands of fate, thou didst mold us, dear old state. Nay, no act of ours brings shame to our hearts.
fearful state.